Welcome to the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. This is Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and in today's installment, we're going to hear from a panel discussion that recently happened down at the Lake George Municipal Complex. It was hosted by the Minnesota Citizens for the Arts, and it was all about the Legacy Amendment and how the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund has had an impact on Minnesotans over these last 10 years since the Minnesota voters approved it. The numbers that have been collected are rather impressive. Comparing the year 2006 to the year 2017, the economic impact just in this area has gone from $8.9 million a year in 2006 to $24.2 million a year in 2017. Attendance at events in 2006, it was almost 220,000, and in 2017, attendance at events has risen to almost 650,000. And with jobs created in 2006, it was 299 jobs. And in 2017, it was 826 jobs. Now, these numbers come from spending of nonprofit arts and cultural organizations and their audiences. This does not include for-profit entities, and nor does it include the spending of artists and creative workers. So while these numbers are very impressive, there's probably more of an economic impact that isn't easily measured. Plus, there's a deeper level that often comes in the form of anecdotal and individual or a family impact. Because maybe your family has had their life changed through something that was supported by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund that wouldn't have existed otherwise. Members of the panel included Leslie LeCure from the Central Minnesota Arts Board, Dennis Whipple, Executive Director of Great Theater, Dan Monlock, an area artist, Bob Johnson from the Paramount Center for the Arts, St. Cloud Mayor Dave Kleiss, and Sandy Boren Barrett, chairperson of the MCA board. And we'll start off with her as she talks a little bit about the importance of these anecdotal stories and then passes it off to Mayor Dave Kleiss.
The numbers are pretty impressive, but actually I think hearing about the effects on your organization or you as an individual artist, those stories are equally as important to this region and for us as we explore the impact of the legacy over the past 10 years. It's hard to believe that's 10 years now. So I guess I would lob it out by saying the numbers are one thing, but what are you hearing in your community with regard to their involvement in the arts, participation, advocacy for, enjoyment of, and this will be a relatively casual conversation.
I can jump in. But that aspect I can tell you from 10 years ago, and one of the things clearly these numbers are something that I can, and you know, you can feel, and you get that vibrancy and that aspect of people coming forward with things. As somebody who I've been mayor for about 13 years, so prior to that. It was a challenge. Of course, we hit recession, you know, at the same time. So the timing for the amendment was also helpful. But there's a number probably you don't have in here, and it'd be interesting to see how this would be broken down. And that is how much additional government dollars are put in, especially local sponsorship from businesses. Because we put in more dollars because we can match and leverage those dollars. In the past, it was always just, you know, lots of it was difficult. I mean, when I became mayor, we had to reduce budget areas, and it was always a challenge to do that. It is so much easier to match the legacy money or private and to bring dollars in. It's like today, we're co-sponsoring this music festival. And there's a significant investment to do that, but it's being forwarded by private investment that we would not even come close to be able to match. So there's another aspect of this, and there's some numbers that I've been talking about, and their statewide numbers are even worse. But for the St. Cloud MSA, we're looking at from between now and 2024 of having we have a tremendous worker shortage in Minnesota. We have a tremendous, it's just like this iceberg looming in the distance, but by 2024, which is only 6 years away, in our MSA alone, we will have 70,400 vacancies in jobs. 70,400 vacancies. And we'll be adding 23,000 jobs between now and then. In 6 years, we'll have close to the need for close to 100,000 people to work just to maintain what we actually have right now. That number is well over four, you know, at the state level is even higher than that. So one of the aspects that employees, it used to always be when, you know, 13 years ago when I was mayor, it was try to bring jobs in. Now the aspect is try to bring in people in. And the arts play the most crucial aspect and factor in that. We're not going to be, in fact, I can tell you there's no way we're, clearly we're not going to change the aspect of demographics and increase the birth rate. I mean, even if we did in 6 years, we're not, we don't have six-year-olds running all of our factories. That's not going to happen. So the aspect of it is keeping and retaining people in a community. We're a community with higher education institutions, almost 30,000 students within our MSA. Keeping and retaining, but also attracting new people, and also working with immigration and emigration. But that aspect of it is people are more interested now, not in compensation and, you know, in the job. It's where do I want to live? It's not where do I want to work. And where do I want to live? I think one of the most crucial aspects of that is the arts. So that our focus has shifted in economic development for the first time, I think, in the last few years than prior to what it was over a decade ago. So our focus, our economic development focus has shifted from adding jobs to adding people, adding employees. And why would you want to live here? And that's as a state as a whole. Why would you want to live in Minnesota?
And that was St. Cloud Mayor Dave Kleiss. And next up on the panel is Paramount Center for the Arts Executive Director Bob Johnson.
I'll jump in and suggest that Dave is absolutely right about people wanting the arts and culture and entertainment in a community where they're going to live and raise their families. I've been doing this for about 3.5 years. For 44 years before that, I was the executive director of two heart and vascular centers. When we were recruiting surgeons and cardiologists to come to St. Cloud, that was the first question. What can I see on stage? What can I hear in terms of music? Where are the best restaurants? It's significantly important, yeah, arts and culture. So I've been at this about 3.5 years. I don't have a lot of historical recall before that. But I can tell you that it's kind of our job to create new and renewed vibrancy in all of our organizations on a regular basis. In 2015, when I started, we sold 70,000 tickets that year to shows at the Paramount Theater. In 2017, 2 years later, we sold 92,000. So we're looking at a 24% increase there. Our presentations in terms of visual arts classes, whether it's painting or fine woodworking, ceramics, that sort of thing, has increased about 30%. The number of classes has increased about 10%. And people are looking for more and more variety. As we talk about millennials who sit behind their computer all day long, they want to get out and they want to work with a piece of clay, or they want to paint, or they want to build something. And so those are the folks that we're trying to tap. The jobs aspect of this, the employment aspect, is significantly important. We took a little bit of a risk 3 years ago. One of the first things I asked the board to do was to raise everyone's wages. Not mine, but everyone's wages. And people went from $8 an hour to $12 an hour in 2.5 years. No one comes into the Paramount Center for the Arts at less than 12 bucks an hour. And that's essential for workers in the arts who may not be working artists. In addition, we are doing as much as we can to enhance the wage of those artists in our community. And whereas our roster used to be X, it's now Y. It's grown significantly because we're able to add funds to the projects that we do, whether they're exhibitions or having artists teach. We're able to pay them closer to what they really need to be paid.
And I am very open to a pay increase. There's in no way, shape, or form, and as an independent artist, am I against that. I think that everybody should get one of those. I can speak on a smaller level. I remember in 2008, I had just graduated college, and I went to St. Cloud State, and I got a degree in fine arts, and I remember participating in the first art crawl in St. Cloud, and I remember it being five venues, and it was an exciting thing at the time. We hadn't had one yet, and that was a pretty big deal at the time. It started with 5 locations downtown, and now I couldn't even tell you how many businesses are on the art crawl, but it's got to be close to 50.
It's 50 or 60.
And I just saw on my Facebook feed yesterday that they gave away $500 towards the artwork, an original artwork, and $250 to support downtown businesses, gift certificates, and as a giveaway for somebody who attended the art crawl. And I thought, well, that's, I mean, it's a small thing, obviously, but what a, coming from 5 locations and just barely happening to something like that with thousands of people going downtown, it was one of those things that I noticed that I thought, well, things have changed a little bit, so, and for the better.
That was longtime local artist Dan Mondlock, and next up is executive director from Great Theater, Dennis Whipple.
I think Great has been lucky between the legacy and just the way that people are clamoring. We've grown like 100% in the last 8 years, from 700,000 to 1.4 million, from under 30,000 audience to over 62,000 last year. We have 1,800 kids in summer camp at 17 locations right now learning, you know, arts. And we're also, we have a big increase in what the schools have done. The schools locally have really done a lot of strategic planning and thought around, as families are demanding what can make St. Cloud more unique, you know, is embedding more arts, and they've been increasing art positions and hours at our schools. And so just overall, there is kind of a good feeling, and people are really, you know, finding the joy in it and also the learning aspects, which is really exciting.
Great. Well, I want to start by, again, thanking our panelists for accepting my invitation to be here today. So thank you very much, and welcome all of you to Region 7W and to St. Cloud. We appreciate your travel here today. You know, the numbers do speak for themselves, but just to put them into a little bit of perspective, the Central Minnesota Arts Board is the third largest regional arts council out of the 11 in appropriation. So back in 2009, pre-legacy, the Central Minnesota Arts Board gave out a total of $137,745 in state grants. Our appropriation at that time was about $180,000 out of the general fund, and then we received money from the McKnight Foundation, third largest 11 regional arts councils. In 2010, when the legacy started, we granted out $490,000 in state funds that year. And in 2018, our most recent granting year, we gave out $573,446 in state-funded grants, legacy and general fund. So our grants have increased by 4 times. And we started with grants when I began here in 2003. Our grant amounts were around $2,000, and now there's 7 for our project grants. And they, you know, those are important numbers, and certainly the numbers that you see in the handout here are impactful. But what's more important are the stories that come from those that funding. And one of my favorite stories involves a grant that we made to the Buffalo Rotary in Buffalo, Minnesota, a small town, around 10,000, I believe, in population. And they decided to put some musical instruments around their trail around Buffalo Lake, some outdoor musical instruments, and we gave them a $15,000 public art grant. Now, that program didn't exist pre-legacy. There's no way we could have given anyone a $15,000 grant, but those musical instruments were installed, and the communities enjoying them. But in particular, there was a young man with Down syndrome, and he was a difficult young man to take care of. He was obese and didn't like to move, and he was having a lot of trouble with his behavior. And after those musical instruments were installed, he asks to go. It's something he looks forward to on a daily basis. And that was their impact story that they shared with us in their final report. that this young man now is engaged in the community. He enjoys going out on the trail and using those instruments. So there's impact story after impact story, and that's one of my favorite ones.
And that was Leslie LeCure from the Central Minnesota Arts Board here on the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota and 88.1 FM KVSC. Today, we are out at the St. George Municipal Complex as the Minnesota Citizens for the Arts held a panel discussion about the impact, both economically and personally, of the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, which comes from the Legacy Amendment that was voted into law by Minnesota voters in 2008. It's been 10 years, and the effects of this choice, well, it's a word you've probably been hearing a lot from these panelists. The effect has been significant. However, it also has become part of our environment. In other words, very much like the philosophical question, does the fish understand water? The Legacy Amendment and all of that it does is part of our daily lives now. So how do we tell people about it? How do we tell the public about it? About what's happened and what is happening? This is the next challenge that our panelists discuss.
I think educating the community is one of the biggest challenges that we have. There's so much vying for their attention. So the acknowledgement, you know, we have a lot of grantees, and the acknowledgement is always, in some respects, a struggle to keep them on task. It's a part of their grant making. But I think that alone is, and now that they're catching on, that it's not only really important to acknowledge where the funds came from, but it's part of their contract and they will be in violation if they don't do it. That has made a significant impact, and our numbers have grown because the awareness it's having a rippling effect. When I was the only full-time staff at the Central Minnesota Arts Board until the Legacy Amendment came along. And then I was able to hire staff. And now I have 3 full-time professional staff that join me, and they are skilled. These are, and one of them is my media specialist, and she has graphic skills, and she provides those skills to produce our annual report and our, wherever those are, all of our grant calendars and advertising and things that get people's attention, because, you know, you as one staff trying to provide information to people versus a host of staff that can develop something as professional as this, including all of our press releases and, you know, the media connections that we make now. It's much higher caliber, and the information is getting out into the community, and they're paying attention.
We also have a community website that we created just exclusively for the arts, aroundthecloud.org, and we've been able to attach, you know, a legacy picture that goes with all legacy-funded events to tell that story there, too, which I think has really helped. On the other hand, I'm going to be honest that sometimes with individual donors, the legacy seems like it can solve all. Like, maybe you don't need this other funding because of this, and really explaining, you know, how we do need to leverage it and manage it and still need that individual donor or that company donor, you know, to still invest also is getting better.
That's kind of a conundrum, actually. People come and they see a full house, they see a beautiful show that runs 3 weeks that Great Theater does, and they think we're doing fine. I've actually had funders say, we're going to change our focus. We're going to give this $20,000 next year to somebody else because you guys look like you're doing fine. And that's why it's really important that people understand that most of us as arts organizations are underwater without contributions, without grant funding. And I'm not talking about the governmental grants like yours. I'm talking about additional ones, whether it's McKnight or Wallace or whomever. There's a tremendous need for people to still support the arts. I think there's potentially a fear that the legislature would sort of readjust the amounts of money that they're spending on water versus arts, and we need to be really cognizant about that on a regular basis.
They can't do that according to the legacy structure.
Good. Good. Well, people think they can. Yeah. Good. That's a good
point for us to hear, actually, as we're talking about how better to communicate things about the amendment. to our constituents.
Yeah, it is good. We one of the things that we do is whether it's a 50 cent roundup on the purchase of a ticket or a $5,000 contribution, everyone gets flooded with thank yous. We can't do this without you. You need to understand that without this money, we wouldn't be here.
So. No, I just echo the challenging aspect with, you know, you're talking about the general, I mean, everybody in this room understands the legacy and the funding. The general public, there's not a clue as to where the funding comes, unless you're taking it away or you're adding it for the first time. There was a lot of discussion at that time, of course, but since then it's just there. And I agree the aspect of when you talk about there's a funding source. I always try to get our folks to, and it's easier from a policy position from a government entity. I always talk about it as a leveraging. We're willing to participate if there's a more significant, and that's what the legacy allows. In fact, we'll help partner in that respect and pay. It's like the concert series that we're talking about. They came to us for a change in, a change in just allowing some streets to be closed. And our first reaction is, well, why don't we partner in some way and make it a festival so it's more community oriented? Because I always tell people, it may be privately done, but I'm going to get all the calls and complaints anyways. So we might as well partner, and that way there's some justification to it. And the same thing with spending. I mean, it doesn't matter who is spending something. The city, for the most part, we get the calls. And I have yet to come across anything where we put some dollars into, where the bulk of them dollars are coming in. And people don't, people consider the legacy piece. I always remind people, I give lots of welcomes, and I tell people, before you leave here, spend money, because the sales tax, goes back into our community. But it also goes into your community from, legacy funding. So if you love the things that we have to offer, spend money, because it'll go back into your community also. So it's a reminder that exists, and it is the government piece of it, but it leverages more. If you can tell, if you can come up with an idea how we get that information out there, people are just barraged by so many different things. It's just hard for people to focus, the general public anyway, to focus on.
And that was St. Cloud Mayor Dave Kleiss once again. It was part of the discussion about informing the public about what the Legacy Amendment does. Well, now we shift the discussion just a little bit with Dan Monlock about what is the value of art? What does it do? What does it do for the community, and why is it important?
Yeah, I did a project last summer that I think involved a lot of families. I did a project that was called Paint It Forward, and I painted 50 plein air watercolors. So I'd go outside and I'd paint a picture of something, and then I gave half of them away on the spot to people that had a connection to that place. And one of my favorite examples was a farm that I painted out in between St. Joe and Cold Spring, and I painted this picture. And I brought it up to the people at the end just to show them, and I gauge their response. And if I feel like they really appreciate it, I'll give them the painting. And this was a farm that had been there for over 100 years. And I get to talk to this guy for a while, and he's lived there his entire life. And he was actually born in this house. And then he tells me about all of his, I think, 5 siblings that were born in the house as well. And he still sleeps in the room that he was born in. And I just think that's an amazing thing, And so... to be able to kind of bring out the heritage and the tradition that's in our community, and to tie it to an art project, and then to have some kind of an acknowledgement of the source of the funding tied to that, it's nice to see it come full circle like that. So, and there is a variety of different examples of that, but yeah.
So it creates a dialogue around the city and its history. That if without that aspect of the arts, it would never take place. And it brings actually both aspects of the Legacy Amendment, because it brings the arts and it brings the environmental piece, because we used a grant for that trail. And we used a grant, and we're going to be using a grant actually for another grant to do those types of stories in all of our parks to explain, it's named after whatever, what's the name, what's the significance around it. So yes, we've been able to do that. That's what I'm hoping to do with the murals that we're doing, the history. Birmingham, Alabama does probably, There's some places that, you know, that really show, in particularly difficult subjects and difficult parts of history, but taken in a way that you can create a dialogue, and, you know, I can't think of anything other than the arts to do that.
We are in a consortium with Mankato State University, the Cedar Cultural Center in Minneapolis, St. Cloud State, and the Paramount Center for the Arts have been for about 24 months now, working with money from APAP and the Doris Duke Foundation on Somali cultural integration through the arts. It's been hugely significant, perhaps not noticed by everyone in central Minnesota, but certainly impactful for a lot of people. We brought Somali artists over from Europe when they can get a visa. That's been trying, I might add. Brought them over, did residencies with the Boys and Girls Club at St. Benedict's, at St. Cloud State. They work with other artists and then doing concerts here on our stage or at SCSU. We've had a couple of actors involved as well. And, you know, with 10,000 Somali adults and 1,600 youth, it's so important for this community that people understand one another and that they're willing to learn about the other person who may not look the same or eat the same food. And we would hope that will have an impact. Using arts to get started on that project will have an impact on people becoming real neighbors.
Another example of that, of course, we have many, many stories on how the legacy money has impacted community and built community engagement. But locally here, Claire Witt, one of the local art mosaic artists, received a grant through the neighborhood group, applied to us for a legacy grant, and she worked with all of the members of that neighborhood, which I think they named maybe 12 different cultures. We have some very, on the east side in particular, we have a lot of multicultures in small communities, small neighborhoods, and they worked together to build a gateway to their neighborhood over by Wilson Park. And each of them made their own mosaic piece and decorated it, and, you know, and then she fired it and installed it in this gateway. So all of these people interacted to create this public art piece that allowed them to engage with one another, get to know one another, and start to support one another when before that they didn't even know each other existed. They would pass by each other in the night and not say hello, but that project really engaged that neighborhood.
Yes, Claire Wood has done the same thing in Lund Prairie. She received three to five grants.
That one gives me goosebumps because there was a tragic murder that occurred in Long Prairie, and they hired Claire to come in and help the community heal through the arts. And they have a sculpture in the park. Claire worked with the whole community, and they created art, and they all did their own little tiles, and then she installed it in their park as a memorial. And that was their healing point. They had a community celebration around the completed project, and they all came together and celebrated life, and it helped them to move on.
Melissa Lee LeCure gets the last word on today's Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. So we're hanging out at the Lake George Municipal Complex for the Minnesota Citizens for the Arts panel discussion on the impact of the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the Legacy Amendment. For more information on how the Legacy Amendment has had an impact upon your community, you can visit the Minnesota Citizens for the Arts online at artsmn.org, where you can find other stories about how the arts have affected communities, as well as how you can become an advocate for the arts, engage in arts education, and contact your representatives in the legislature. And of course, all these other entities, including the City of St. Cloud, the Paramount Center for the Arts, Great Theater, the Central Minnesota Arts Board, and Dan Monbach, all have their respective websites that you can link to off of our website at kvsc.org under the Podcasts and Untold Stories of Central Minnesota tab and the link to this story. This is Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota is made possible through support from the Legacy Amendment, and the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, and has been produced at KVSC, a proud member of AMPRS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota's communities.